morning, New Mexico. Welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting live from the Santa Fe Baking Company, streaming on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org, thanks to Dotfoil Computer Services, and we're at facebook.com/radiocafe. Later on in the program, we're going to be speaking to Pat Kushlis from the Santa Fe World Affairs Forum about Yemen, and Rob DeWalt will be with us speaking of the arts. Right now, I would like to welcome Elaine Pagels. She's a professor of religion at Princeton University. She's a recipient of a MacArthur Fellowship. She's the author of many books, including The Gnostic Gospels, The Origin of Satan, The Beyond Belief, The Secret Gospel of Thomas, Reading Judas, The Gospel of Judas, and Shaping Christianity. And her forthcoming book is about the Book of Revelation and other books of Revelation. She will be giving a lecture tonight, sponsored by the C.G. Jung Institute in Santa Fe, at 7 o'clock at the James A. Little Theater. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to be here.
It's great to have you. Now, the Book of Revelation, whether people have read it lately or not, is full of horror, dragons, plagues, earthquakes, famine, and so on. Finally, the Last Judgment, and good winning over evil. There were other books of Revelation that didn't get into the Bible. What's the difference?
Yes, that's a fascinating question, and I only found out recently about the other books of Revelation. The one in the New Testament is all dreams and nightmares. It's just visions. It doesn't really have a story. It doesn't have ethics. It's an amazing book in terms of the images. It's also about the end of the world and, you know, the battle, as you said, between good and evil. It's the story of Star Wars or Lord of the Rings or any of those kinds of apocalyptic stories. And finally, good wins after a big battle. The other books of Revelation were actually found with what we call the Gnostic Gospels. And there may be 20 or 30 of them. But they're not about the end of the world. They're about how you find the divine in the world now.
That's a huge difference.
Yes, it is.
And it seems that I was looking, I mean, your book's not out yet, it's going to come out soon, but just the little preview that I've had so far, in one way of thinking, the other ones are kind of more practical.
Well, I think they are, and they come from lots of different sources. Some of them are Jewish, some of them are Christian, some of them are Egyptian and Greek. They're about the Greek god Hermes, and they may be influenced by Buddhist missionaries who were in Egypt at the time. That these texts were written about 2,000 years ago.
In terms of the Book of Revelation that we do know, that is in the New Testament, what do we know about its writer, the prophet John? Who was he? What was his political, historical context?
Far as we can tell, John was a Jewish refugee from the war in his home country, in which Jews had rebelled against the Roman Empire in the year 66. And in the year 70, the Roman troops came in, 60,000 of them, and just completely destroyed Jerusalem. The fall of the temple, it's a terrible day in the history of Judaism. It's catastrophic. And I don't think we can really understand that book until we see that it's wartime literature. It's written by somebody who's suffered the war, who's worried about the consequences of war, and who's in agony about what happened to his people. And he's very angry, and he's waiting for the day then God will come and set it right, sort of finish off the Romans and all the enemies. And Christ will reign.
And so, looking at it through that lens, it seems like, as you say, the Book of Revelation is a kind of war story.
It is that, but it also, because it's written in these evocative images, I mean, he doesn't talk about Rome directly, because criticizing Rome directly when you're a subject of Rome can get you into serious danger. So he writes about it in the language of the classical prophets as monsters, beasts, whores. You know, these language you get out of Ezekiel and Daniel and all those prophets.
How do you understand, as a scholar, how do you go about trying to understand how the book was meant to be interpreted at the time? I mean, obviously, it'd be hard to interpret it literally, although I suppose some people do.
Some people always have. But actually, they're always rereading it in terms of their own time. If it's basically a war of, you know, the good forces against the evil forces, you can read into it anything, you know, from Al-Qaeda, you know,
right,
to whatever.
Well, has it often, I mean, you give us some examples of how it's been interpreted in past centuries.
What fascinates me is because the images are what one of my friends calls open symbols, that is, they're not very specifically tied to one kind of person or another, they could be read by people on both sides. One example is the American Civil War. In the horror of the Civil War, which is hard for us to imagine how many people died in that hideous war in this country, people on the Confederate side were reading this as the end of time, and this is what was prophesied by John and so forth. And people on the Union side were also reading it as the end of time. In the Battle Hymn of the Republic, you know, mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord, trampling out the vintage where the grapes of wrath is stored. This is all saying, this is the end of time. This is what John was talking about. So you can use it on both sides. Same thing happened in World War II and in the war in Iraq.
And it probably happened in the year 750 and the year 1232.
It happened exactly, as you say, when the Muslims, I mean, the evil was seen as Muslims at one point, in, you know, when the Muslims conquered Jerusalem.
Now, when I think about the way that the Bible is interpreted in contemporary culture, there's obviously a danger of moral oversimplification, and people seem to use the Book of Revelations or the Book of Revelation to draw very simple lines between good and evil.
Well, I think the book specializes in moral oversimplification. I mean, that's the point. It always says, if you're the reader, we're the good people. They, whoever you want to say they are the bad people. And the lines are very clearly drawn. There's absolutely nothing gray about it. It's black and white. And, you know, we suffer, they are evil, we will conquer.
Now, one thing that is quite mysterious in the midst of all this is, what does the end of time mean?
Oh, yes. Well, that's a tough one. I mean, for John and people like him, it meant that the end of the world was coming, and the day of judgment, God was going to judge the world, and it would come to an end. The other books of Revelation talk about the end of ordinary time dimension, right? Or they talk about how the divine is present in everything, in what we think of as war or peace or light or dark or different kinds of groups that seem to be completely oppositional.
And that gives rise to what we might call moral complexity in contrast to the other book.
Yes, it's a great relief after the Book of Revelation, because this book, it is truly fascinating. I started out not liking it much. I've gotten to appreciate the power of it. If you look at the culture, the music, the art that has poured out of that book, from Milton and Dante to Michelangelo and Blake, it's just an astonishing source of inspiration for artists and musicians. But moral complexity is not what it's about.
We're talking to Elaine Pagels about her upcoming book, which is about the Book of Revelation and other books of Revelation at the James A. Little Theater tonight. What is the process like for you as a scholar? So you are now facing this book that has been faced by billions of human beings since the year 90 or whatever.
Right.
And what is new about the context in which you're looking at it?
Well, I started working on it when I realized, you know, the United States was about to invade Iraq, and people were actually still using this book. And I got upset with that, as many other people did, and thought, how do people read this stuff, and why do they read it that way? And so I wanted to understand, what's the appeal of this book, psychologically, politically, socially, whatever, religiously? And then to see why that kind of story proved so appealing. The other books of Revelation are what really fascinate me, and I want to show tonight a lot of the art and music that goes with this book, but also show these other books that, for me, have real spiritual power.
Now, the question of, first of all, how were they found and why do we not know them?
We don't know them because they were banned by the bishops in the 4th century. At the time when there were enormous arguments after the Roman Empire became Christian about what books are the right books to read for Christians? I mean, the Hebrew Bible had been kind of established by the rabbis, but there were lots of Christian books. And there were many arguments about what to put in and what not to put in. We have actually five lists of, this is the real New Testament canon, between 350 and 400, and all of them leave this book out except the one that actually prevailed. And so the question of what is that book doing in the New Testament fascinates me.
What is it doing there?
I think what it's doing is serving the purposes of the people who put it there. They completely reinterpreted it. That's because John's images are so open, so multivalent, so labile, that you can do almost anything with them. And he interpreted it not as the whore and the beast and all the evil images, the monsters, not as the Roman Empire, which now is his patron, but as heresy. That is, any Christians he didn't like. And it's read that way by Martin Luther, who used it against the Catholic Church, and by Catholics who used it against Luther, and by the wars in Europe, the religious wars between Catholics and Protestants, and against Muslims. It's been reinterpreted over and over. But the way it can be reinterpreted and the openness of the symbolism is partly the source of its power.
Getting back to this question of moral simplicity versus complexity, was that part of the reason for keeping the other books of Revelation out? In other words, putting more of the kind of engagement and questioning and so on in the hands of the people who are reading the Bible?
Yeah, this was the question I started out with. How did this one get there and the other ones all were completely suppressed, so we didn't even know about them? And the person who put it there, his lifelong struggle was to establish an Orthodox church. Everybody signed this creed. Everybody has to believe this. If you're not in the Catholic Church, you're going into the lake of fire, which is pictured vividly at the end of John's book. So the end of the book of Revelation is about the lake of fire and the heavenly Jerusalem. These are your choices, right? And he said, well, it's a question of whether you're Orthodox or not. And to this day, if you walk out of most Catholic churches or any Christian churches in Europe, you'll see the last scene is the last judgment. It'll have the damned and the saved, so that when you walk out of the church, it reminds you that you better be in the right relationship to the right church or else.
I was thinking, and this has happened to me often as a young person reading the Bible and not being able to make head or tail of it, and then starting to read Buddhist scripture and Buddhist ideas, and then those kind of end up shedding some light on
yes.
Christianity and so on. And one of the things I was thinking, if the end of time is to have any meaning at all, then maybe it's an inner state.
You know, that's very interesting because, of course, Buddhists also talk about angelic and diabolic beings. But since the 4th century, many people have read it that way, and mystics have read it that way. It's clear that William Blake didn't think of it in any literalistic way. But you don't have to read it literally to take it seriously. And many people do read it exactly as you say.
For you, as a scholar of religion, and you've written many books that are accessible to the public, what is it like to encounter all the kind of maybe pop or even TV pop culture biblical interpretation that's out there?
I am fascinated by the hold on our imagination of these sort of remarkable collection of ancient traditions and images. I mean, it shows you how powerful they are. You see them in video games. I mean, my students have brought me all kinds of stuff about the Book of Revelation in popular music and songs and movies and all kinds of things that are going on. I find that very interesting. But I think we need to understand how that grabs hold of our emotions and our unconscious and the way it's manipulated, particularly politically.
And you think it's still being used that way?
Of course it is.
And I was thinking, everybody must think, I mean, and you've given many examples of this, that the Book of Revelation and the fight between good and evil is about a time that's just around the corner.
Yes.
In the year 90, they weren't thinking 2,000 years from now something is going to happen, any more than we're thinking that in the year 4,010, X and such is going to happen. We don't care. It's too far away.
No, but if you go on a website, I'm not sure which one, but there are websites that tell you where are we in the timetable of the end time. And we're right this is the cusp before the end, right? And that is exactly what people have said for 2,000 years, because that's the way the book is written.
Yeah.
The book, I mean, John was convinced that the explosion of Mount Vesuvius and, you know, the death of Nero, these were the signs of the end.
Well, and symbols like earthquakes, as our recent history has shown us, I mean, they happen all the time.
Earthquakes, wars happen all the time. Yes, I mean, the signs of the end are always with us. So it's always convincing.
Right. We're talking to Elaine Pagels. Now, if I may ask, for you as a professor of religion, do you practice or believe in any religion, or has this sort of inoculated you against that?
Well, maybe both. I started doing this because I was completely fascinated and intrigued. Was brought up to think religion was nonsense because my father was a scientist who had no use for it. I found it enormously compelling emotionally when I was about 14 and 15. And even though I left it, I just kept wondering, how does religion have such power? I mean, I think it's very much like any kind of art or music. It's the imagination, obviously. So my work has been a study of how religion has that effect on us. And I do that because I think I'm very susceptible to it. But it also is a sense, as you said, an inoculation, in the sense of you don't just buy into it. What I learned in working on the last book is that I don't care what I believe very much. I mean, of course, we all believe certain things. You know, we believe the car will start or whatever, because it's based on experience. But what I mean is, believing in the kinds of doctrines that Christianity offers doesn't interest me at all anymore. It's more how you engage these kinds of powerful images and how we deal with them. I think the book is primarily about hope and fear.
The book of Revelation that's in the Bible.
It's as though you take every nightmare you ever had and wrap it up into one huge nightmare, and the book of Revelation is that. And then at the end, it doesn't end with everybody, you know, dead on the floor like a Shakespeare tragedy. It ends with the New Jerusalem. It opens up into light. So it's almost, you think about it of approaching death, a personal death. You could think about it as a catastrophic destruction of the world. And there is also hope as well as terror in it.
Another thing that people could, in theory, do with your book is say, oh, well, this was the one book of Revelation that was used to manipulate the people and con them into thinking in terms of orthodoxy and simplicity, so we're not going to use that one anymore.
Well, I think that's a perfectly reasonable decision.
Are the other books of Revelation, are the texts in your new book?
Yes, I love some of these texts, and I'm going to talk about a few of them tonight and show people what some of what they are. And put excerpts from them in so that people can go and look at them.
Now, you have devoted your scholarly life to writing not only scholarly articles that only scholars can read, but stuff that's accessible to the rest of us. Why have you made that choice?
Because most of my friends aren't conventionally religious in any way, and I love sharing this work.
And have gotten a lot of fame and popularity from it.
Well, that's kind of been an unexpected pleasure, too.
Elaine Pagels is professor of religion at Princeton University, the author of many books. Her forthcoming book is about the Book of Revelation and other books of Revelation. And once again, tonight she is giving a lecture at 7 o'clock at the James A. Little Theater in Santa Fe, sponsored by the C.G. Jung Institute. For more information, you can go to santafeyoung.org or just show up at 7 o'clock tonight. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. I've enjoyed it.
We're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a moment. Please stay tuned.